welcome, Popcorn Junkies. This is our top five. So you've seen our 10 to 6. These are our top five films. And at the end of our top five films, I'm also going to talk about sort of nice surprises and, you know, other films that maybe surprise us that aren't in the top 10. So
they're heavy on independent, aren't they, the top?
I found it a really tricky year this year when I was isolating my top 10. It was a really curious batch because there are some really obvious contenders this year for the top five. I mean, you know, we've had films from all of the kind of major male auteurs that there are in the industry. You've had Killers of the Flower Moon by Scorsese. You've had Napoleon by Ridley Scott. Oppenheimer by Christopher Nolan. You've even had a sort of Indiana Jones. You've even had Spielberg's The Fablemans. You know, we've had Bo is Afraid by Ari Aster. We've even had Darren Aronofsky with The Whale. And we've had Bradley Cooper's Maestro.
True.
You know, we've had so many white men's films, and all of them kind of auteurs, or, you know, sort of well-established and respected and lauded kind of directors. I mean, the only one almost missing from that list is a Tarantino film. And what's weird about that is that as I've been muscling my sort of top 10 together, I've been looking for all the right places for those directors of such caliber, and in those films there are moments of great brilliance, all the brilliant sparks. I mean, you try to get Killers of the Flower Moon onto the bottom rung of your 10, didn't you, by stealth, and then you pushed it off. But so it'll be interesting to see if any of those actually pop up in the top five. So my number five is Pearl. Pearl, starring Mia Goth. This is a sort of very retro sort of horror film. It stars the guy who's going to basically be the new Superman in the new Superman reboot. But Mia Goth is the woman at the centre. And this is a film that sits within a trilogy. And this is a prequel to, is it XXX? And then we've got another one coming called Maxine, which is going to be the final one, which is released this year.
You don't have to have seen the middle one, though.
No, you don't. You don't. Though it kind of helps. But I thought Pearl was an incredibly stylistically inventive horror film. I thought her performance at the centre of it was on a par with... She landed as something of a Shelley Duvall kind of in The Shining.
Yeah,
she was absolutely sensational. And there are moments in it of such staggering brilliance and cleverness, which I thought was actually much... more successful than XXX or whatever the original one, which is after this. And I just thought it was really interesting about femininity, about a woman going mad, about insanity. I felt it also did that clever thing which few films do these days, where it became almost a modern day fairy tale, a bit Hansel and Gretel-esque, but it's original, and it's about her desire to be wanted and to have sex, and there were riffs on The Wizard of Oz, and she's shagging a scarecrow, and I mean, it's a batshit crazy film. And it's incredibly bloody and gory, but it also has a style that I haven't seen elsewhere in the cinema this year. So it really,
I
really enjoyed it. So Pearl
and
is my number five.
She's an absolute find, isn't she? As a main star, she's in a few things, and she's so watchable.
So watchable.
My number five is, believe it or not, Barbie.
Ah, what? You hated it?
No, I didn't hate it. I thought it could have done much more, I didn't hate it at all. I thought it was a clever film.
Did you?
So I wanted it to.
You were taking Maddie to task and everything.
It wasn't a feminist film, and it was purporting to be. That's what bothered me. But in terms of the way it looked, what it was actually saying in a Hollywood type of way, Ken the doll, who was standaway the best sort of person. I have to be honest with myself. I thoroughly enjoyed it from beginning to end. It's just that.
I'm so surprised.
She could have made it much more feminist. But maybe she thought of that and then didn't do it because she would have lost viewers.
Wow.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, spoiler alert to our top five. Barbie isn't in my top five, but it is one of my nice surprises, because I think whilst I was looking to all of the old-fashioned men for, you know, sort of, I don't know, big screen tentpole excitement, I think of all the big releases this year, Barbie was the one that delivered the best or the most, you know, in terms of what it set out to achieve. I'm just surprised that it's there for you, because I thought you were very, very critical of it.
I was arguing a sort of specific point that she could have made it 10 times more feminist than she did. But obviously she's the director. She knows what she's doing.
Well, my number four is Soft and Quiet. Now, Soft and Quiet was this sort of very low-key... kind of indie film that was, I think, landed. Was it on Prime TV or something? It had a very, very short cinematic release. This was a quiet number. This was a truly unsettling, sinister, theoretically one take shot, though it isn't strictly, but you sign up to it as a one take shot film in which a group of women sort of come together and over, I think it's a cherry pie or something, isn't it? They sort of basically, what are they? They're white supremacists who go on the rampage. Yeah. And it sounds kind of, and it's incredibly challenging and it's incredibly difficult to watch. And I was getting the sort of vibe from it that this was almost a modern day version of the shockability of Straw Dogs back in the day.
Yeah.
This had something about it where there was nothing mediating us from the violence being meted out against Latino residents in this community, this act of racism. And it was so unflinching in its depiction of theoretically nice, cutesy kind of white American women spinning off into becoming nasty killers. Yeah, nasty white supremacist Ku Klux Klan-y killers. But I thought it was a very clever film because it managed to do all of that whilst at the same time observing some of the real cornerstones of a horror film. But that didn't make you think that it was any less kind of real. It felt very real, and that's what made it so frightening.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with everything Mark said just then, and you won't believe yourselves, but I could show you my list to see. That has been, I've got it down as soft and gentle, I don't know why.
Oh, right. I think that's Head and Shoulders shampoo, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. What's it called?
Soft and Quiet.
Soft and Quiet. It's on every list, and then it's had to go when I moved around my bottom ones, but it is truly terrifying in real life terms. And there's no way it's expected or you can even begin to think that this might happen.
No.
It totally stayed with me almost more than anything else. Mm. So it really ought to be in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Mark. It's absolutely brilliant.
And very well made. Some really, 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 gobsmackingly bold, brave, simple filmmaking decisions made within the making of it, which I love.
Be prepared, though, if you go
yeah.
see it. It
is. Yeah, yeah. So what's your number four, Mum?
Unspeakable things. My number four is Tar.
Ooh.
My famous words as I came out of the cinema after seeing Tar was, I'm really pleased I didn't die and had missed that because I thought it was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it twice and I should. I maybe saw it twice, but at the same time.
Because maybe you won't be alive if you see it again.
Well, exactly. I absolutely loved it. I was blown away. I loved the music. I loved the fact that we were in her head. And Mark didn't like her performance or her character at all, but I absolutely did. I related to her. And I thought it was a mesmerizing film.
My number three is May, December.
So is mine.
Oh, how funny. Well,
yeah.
And I think that's the right place for it because it, you know, it, and when I said about women talking, a similar thing kicked in for me with this film as did for Women Talking, which was I have to really train myself not to be dismissive, if you like, of films that don't or aren't engaging all the time with camera and montage and edit and all of the filmic devices. And that's not to say that Women Talking didn't and that May December didn't either. It did. But, it, you know, I'm a big stylist. I do like style. I do like that kind of stuff. And so May December for me is like Women Talking. It's left me thinking about so many things. I've sat with the characters in that film for far longer than any other film I've seen in a while. I think Reality did the same thing. But, you know, in terms of a film that really kind of speaks to stuff in the real world, for saying it's something that's,
Absolutely. You know.
And, you know, about grooming and all this kind of stuff. So I just think, yes, there's a lot I didn't like about it in terms of how it was executed. And yet, in a weird way, you can never sort of say they should have done it this way, because maybe it was the way in which they did that that allowed me to really access the characters and the, you know, Natalie Portman's fantastic. The young guy who plays Julianne Moore's husband is fantastic too.
I mean, I saw it a little while ago. I don't think that we're joining forces and whatever, because we saw that completely separately, didn't we?
Mm.
And I thought you would like it for reasons to do with the fact that it's a doppelganger and filmic film. But how strange that we both put it down as three.
I like that. So we're getting to the biggies, the big guns. Number two for me is Talk To Me. I think that this film is, yes, it's a genre film. Yes, it kind of has moments in it. You know, I think in the review that me and Maddie did, I talked about that. I wasn't totally sold on the dead mum's character and all that kind of stuff. But this had an energy to it and a verve and a sort of vim and vigour to it, which, you know, I'm not saying it just because they're YouTube creators and it's their first proper film. But that verve, vim and kind of vigour behind the filmmaking, again, a little bit like the creator, I hope that this becomes sort of something that more filmmakers kind of grab hold of. It had a sense of humour, it was shot from the hip, it wasn't sort of precious in its storytelling, and in a sense, even rumbling through a few kind of clichés in terms of characterisation and plotting, it's like, well, they just charged through them with a sort of Australian brio. Is it Brio? Is that right? Yeah.
You know,
and it has that, it's got a real Aussie feel to it. I've missed Aussie films this year, and Talk to Me has a real Aussie sensibility and its sense of humour.
Yeah, but it is.
Beautifully
yeah.
edited, brilliantly shot, brilliantly conceived. You know, a real film that I think just keeps developing its cult status. I just hope they are doing a sequel, that the sequel doesn't exhaust it. Because I just found it really, really entertaining. And on a second watch, I found it even more scary, actually, in a weird way.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
My number two is Past Lives.
Oh, wow.
I cannot put that in highly enough, almost, except obviously it's not number one.
Is it one you wished you'd not gone to your death not having seen? Is that how you said it? Because these are the Past Lives.
Ask me that.
Past Lives and Tar were the two that we disagreed on the most.
Yeah, they are. I don't know if I'd say that, although I thought there were moments of... Is there such a word as sublimity? No, there were moments that I felt were sublime.
Mm.
I thought it was amazing. Everything was understated. It's about a couple who grow up together and then one of them goes off, the girl goes off, and then they sort of join up by virtual media and then connect again. And it's how they connect and where they connect and what they say to each other and what they've felt all this time and how important it was to them. It's also the whole thing of where they live. The boy lives in America. The girl, I'm so sorry, lives in America, and the boy's still in Korea. Yeah, sorry, I've gone off. I loved it. I look forward to seeing it again. It's a quiet film, but I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, again, that doesn't feature in my top 10, but it equally certainly wasn't one of my worst. It didn't speak to me in the way that it spoke to you.
No,
it just didn't. And there was a lot to like about it. There was a lot, you know, it was a very meditative film, but it really just didn't do anything for me, really.
Yeah, meditative, that's the word I was looking for.
Well, we're hitting number one, and I wonder whether, and I've got a funny feeling, that we might be having exactly the same number one.
Oh, no, does it begin with A?
Yes.
Oh, no.
That's all right. What's wrong with that?
People will think we're in cahoots.
Yeah, so we're not in cahoots. It means that I like the fact that it means that we're obviously closer in mind than ever before.
Yeah.
Because we had, I have to say, Past Lives and Tar made me really query our connection in film. Whereas
well,
this,
good in a way.
Yeah, well, it is good. No, yeah. I love disagreement, even though a lot of our viewers get very, very hot under the collar about it, don't they? so, yeah, Anatomy of a Fall.
Yes.
And I'm going to say it again about this film, and I won't say much. I'll shut up. But it is cinematic, but it's not that cinematic. You know what I mean, it's not engaging with the tools of camera. You know, again, you know, it's not slick. It's not far. You know, it sounds like I'm very superficially only interested in that kind of thing. I mean, like Pearl is a both performatively brilliant and stylistically inventive. This wasn't stylistically inventive, but it gently, I thought, pushed down on all the pressure points of cinema, whether it be the use of sound, the sense of, you know, in terms of the edit, not quite seeing what's in the frame or outside the frame or in a sequence point of view. So it was very gently cinematic, but not in an overt fashion. But it was an incredibly thought-provoking film that, once again, I was just left thinking about the character, the woman.
Well, wow. I mean, I've
kept Sandra Hüller, all of that.
Maybe not so much the filmic aspect. I can hardly remember, except for the sound. I can remember the sound vividly. But I like sort of almost Agatha Christie who did it type films, and this was a who did it.
Yeah.
Did she do it? Did she not do it? Was it an accident? Was it not an accident? And that's played out absolutely wonderfully.
You see, I don't like whodunits, and yet what I found really compelling about this was I was literally yo-yoing from thinking she's a delusional, egotistical, narcissistic psychopath who has stolen the creativity of someone else to... No, she's a put-upon woman who has simply gone for what all men go for all the time and is being judged for that.
Okay, so I don't know how you could have thought that.
Well, because there were moments where she seemed so dispassionate in her. I mean, there were even moments where I thought there was the relationship between her and her lawyer was such that could there have been an even more ulterior motive to all of this than before? The one thing, the one thing I do regret in my review is I didn't talk at great length about the boy. I want to say briefly, I wasn't overly impressed with his performance or the character, though I know obviously he's a critical part of the film because it's his testimony and where he swings things and his loyalty. But even in his character, I thought it was interesting because he was the bellwether in a sense. And his loyalty sort of tipped towards, in a sense, what he thought would keep him alive in.
Yeah, it was crucial in that respect, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And don't forget the dog.
Well, a film in which the only character that knows fully what happened is the bloody dog.
I know. Yes.
Heavy wears the crown on the dog, eh? He looked...
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
it's
it was
absolutely
brilliant.
Fascinating, and we both recommend it separately and together, it would seem.
Absolutely.
That's number one, love.
Well, that's our top 10 films. That's done across two films. And there's now going to be a third upload. And on that third upload, we're going to be talking about our absolute turkeys, our worst five films. And also, separate to that, we're going to talk about our worst films, and then I'm going to talk about biggest disappointments. And then for some of you, the greatest omissions. You'll be like, well, where's this and where's that? And we can explain why perhaps they're not in there at all.